I can understand, and I say this in the book, that an observer from Europe or the United States would have a lot to disagree with in the Wahhabi tradition of Saudi Arabia. It is a very puritanical form of religion, and it is, I think of it as a kind of extreme form of Muslim Protestantism. No icons, no saints, no intercession, no tombs. And I think in that regard, some of the more radical Protestants in Europe in the time of Martin Luther would recognize some of those emphases. After all, the United States has a an origin in Puritanism itself, there was a great deal of concern in the early colonial period about sexual morality and so forth. There were even veiling controversies. The things that go on in Saudi Arabia are objectionable to contemporary Americans. It's not as if it's a completely alien world. The thing that I would underscore is that, it's legitimate to take issue with human rights violations coming out of a Wahhabi authoritarianism or Puritanism. It's legitimate to pressure the Saudis on the position of women. But the allegation is frequently made by Western politicians and pundits that somehow the Wahhabi tradition is tied up with the promotion of terrorism or is engaged in terrorism, and that I can't find any real evidence for. It's certainly the case that there have been Saudis who have gone in for terrorism, but then there have been Egyptians who are Sunni Muslims. There have been Shiites, Iran, Lebanon, Iraq. That have gone in for terrorism. So I can't find any evidence that the Wahhabi tradition is particularly tied to terrorism. And indeed, I think that mostly the Saudis who got radicalized fighting the Soviet Union back in the 1980s and in alliance with the United States at that time. And it was, in many ways, the Reagan project of using these Muslim private armies against his Soviet foes. I think that that started turning some of the Wahhabis who traditionally had been somewhat quietist towards a more radical vision.
Staying with Saudi Arabia, Newsweek has an interesting article this week on King Abdullah, talking about him and some of the reforms he's attempting, and it posits whether at the age of 85 he can actually make things really change against an intransigent bureaucracy. What are your thoughts about him right now?
Well, King Abdullah, it seems to me, has played a remarkable role. He's been among the more impressive of the modern Saudi monarchs. He put forward a wide-ranging peace plan for Israel and Palestine in 2002, which hasn't gone any place, but it had the elements, I think, of a settlement of the issue, and it was courageous of a Saudi monarch to offer peace to Israel under any circumstances. Showed, I think, some resistance to the idea of the U.S. invading Iraq. He didn't take a public stance, but behind the scenes, I think he was very worried where these things would go. And, of course, he was very right to be. He resisted Washington's attempts to set him against Iran to create a kind of regional Cold War, instead invited President Ahmadinejad to Riyadh, and has tried to keep lines open. There are not good relations between Saudi Arabia and Iran, but he's tried to keep them at least correct and to keep a kind of hotline going. So in all of these ways, it seems to me that he's played a positive role. He recently appointed the first woman cabinet minister in Saudi Arabia. And he also has made more of a place in Saudi society and politics for the Shiite minority. We think it's about 12% of the population. The dominant Wahhabi branch does not typically like Shiites very much. and has in the past sometimes persecuted them. But there have been municipal elections on which Shiites now serve as elected officials in largely Shiite cities, and there are Shiites on the consultation council that advises the king, and which is the embryonic parliament.